Hello, and welcome to Reel Number 5 of The Usual's Reel Reviews, where we discuss the news, rumors, and trailers of our favorite and upcoming movies. I'm your host, Will, and with me is my hetero life mate, Marshall.
What up, yo?
I'm excited because this is our special Deadpool review slash Oscars prediction show.
I saw it twice.
Yeah, you went without me the second time.
Well, we went, and then I went the next day with the wife. Date night.
Date night. We were actually supposed to have a special guest on this today, but that didn't happen. You can decide whether you want to cut this or not.
That's all right. I think it's important. We are going to have more guests on various shows. This is the one where we probably would have the fewest guests, but we've had some interest from our community of friends for our universe. Our Versa episodes and some other stuff. So we have some people lined up. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Our guest today was supposed to be my sister Donna.
Right.
Who is, if it's possible, the one person in the world who's a bigger Oscars fan than I am.
I didn't even know how that's possible.
She actually throws Oscar parties.
Crazy.
I know, right?
I'm throwing a D&D party soon.
I know. I'm so excited.
That's tomorrow.
Gonna be
in. You're not invited. Moving on.
So let's get started. And imagine you are having a frosty beverage in your favorite theater as we turn down the house lights and start the show. I'm drinking Newcastle tonight. Today, how about you?
Oh, this is going to be a double whammy because this is going to leak into our other show. But sometimes we record two shows at a time, but that's behind the scenes. I'm drinking Drake's Denogonizer, which I've had on the show before. It's an Imperial IPA. It's 9.75%. Boy, I better make this last. It's Drake's Brewing Company. It's very, very good. I'm gonna milk it a little bit through this one. Otherwise, by the time we get to our other show, I'll be ready.
A little buzzed.
I'll be ready.
All right. So this is a little bit different format today. I'm messing with the way that we're going through stuff in this episode. So if you like what you hear or
they don't like
the changes, definitely give us some feedback, and we'll give you all the information at the end of the show. But we're gonna start off with Deadpool.
Yeah.
We saw it opening day.
Yep. First showing.
Matinee. We saw it at 4:30 on Friday.
Yep.
First thoughts.
I think it's probably one of the best movies I've seen in a long time.
I agree.
And for a couple reasons. I mean, granted, Star Wars was great. This movie did so many things right. It did so many things to really bring attention to a franchise that I love, but they did the comic book justice. It was a lot of fun. It was freaking hilarious, yet dark at the same time, which is exactly what Deadpool is.
I'm going to go outside the story for a minute and just talk about the importance of making of this particular film in and of itself. Because even with Star Wars, if it had failed, which, you know, it so far
likelihood of that was pretty low, but
exactly. But I mean, if it had been like Phantom Menace bad,
yeah,
right, it still was going to make its money. Not as much as it has made. I mean,
sure.
As we're talking now, it's over $900 million domestically and over $2.1 billion worldwide.
Crazy.
It still would not have hampered what was going to happen going forward.
Right.
We'd still have Rogue One. We'd still have Episode 8.
Disney wouldn't have stopped.
Exactly.
Right.
If Deadpool had failed, it would have signaled the failure of any chance of an R-rated superhero movie. Whereas now, I think it puts less pressure on Suicide Squad.
For sure.
And within a week of release, they're already talking about retooling the Wolverine 3 script to make it R-rated.
Right.
Which makes more sense because Wolverine should have always been a little bit more vicious.
It really should have been. And, I mean, you have claws. You know, he has claws. And he's a vicious animal. Yet,
we've never seen him go full
berserker. He never sheds blood or cuts off limbs and stuff like that. So,
which is what you can do in an R-rated one.
Right. And actually, in the other show notes, I talk about that. But for the other show, which I think is worth mentioning there too. But yeah, I think this really does. You're right. It opens up doors for rated R comic book films.
Absolutely.
And there are many comic books out there that would do the comic book more justice if it was rated R. Which is also, although it's not, you know, rated R, but it's Netflix, but the Jessica Jones series.
Yes.
It's very dark, yep. Vicious, and that kind of thing. And I think, although it doesn't say it's rated R, it's definitely got those themes, makes that work. So,
you know what I think, and you're gonna laugh at me, and I know
I laugh at you all the time.
I know, and I know our audience is gonna laugh at me, and I'm gonna make a comparison between Deadpool and American Pie.
I mean, yes, please do that. I can't wait.
No, it's going to be great. The reason being is that you know, we had a fine tradition of R-rated gross-out comedies in the 70s. I mean, you had Porky's, you had Meatballs, right. You had all these things that just didn't care, right? But then throughout the 80s and 90s, it was all, you know, tamped down. I mean, with the, I think the last one you could say would have been Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay.
Was a good R-rated teen movie like that, right?
Right.
But then, you know, you went into Breakfast Club and Weird Science and
all the John Hughes stuff.
Right. Where it's funny, you could actually reference Jay and Silent Bob in in Dogma when they're heading over and they're talking about, you know, Weird Science, where, you know, they make a girl in a basement but she don't get down because it's PG-13. Because
PG-13, right.
Exactly, right. So, you know, that exact sentiment. But then you get American Pie coming in 99, and you had some other movies before, but it really, I mean, dude, he screwed a pie.
Yeah.
And
we watched it.
Yeah, and it was talking about webcams, and, you know, you saw boobs and
boobs.
But and it totally opened it up for, I mean, I'm not saying that one is dependent on the other, but it made it possible for Hangover to come out and
absolutely.
Road Trip and, you know, all these other funny R-rated comedies.
Right. And so what we're getting at here, obviously, is that since Fox did this well,
right.
The other, especially the other Fox Marvel properties,
which can go dark like X-Men or like Wolverine.
We can go there now without worrying like, oh my god, what are people gonna think? And it makes me excited because I love the darker the better for me.
Yes,
I'm not a big fluff like, oh, I can't show blood. Like me, I'd rather see it. Even the wife, it was funny, we'll get back to Deadpool in a minute, I'm sure, but the wife was saying like she wished the movie wasn't so gory. But as a Deadpool comic reader, if it wasn't gory, it was not going to work.
It would have just been disturbing.
Yeah, it would have been weird because Deadpool is chopping off limbs, shooting people in the face. You know, the limbs flying is definitely it's in every comic. I mean, he wields those blades, cutting people's arms and legs off all the time.
Right.
So,
you know, and actually that kind of harkens me back to two different references really quick. One is, the short-lived Aaron Sorkin series, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
Okay.
Which is loosely based on a behind the scenes look at like a Saturday Night Live type of show, right? Well, in one of the skits that they're talking about was they were doing Quentin Tarantino's Thanksgiving Turkey That Won't Die. And the premise of the skit was that it's a turkey that no matter what happens, no matter they're carving or whatever, it just won't die. Oh, and it's God. Just spurting blood all over the place.
Oh, that's nasty.
Which is hilarious in and of itself.
Right.
But evidently their props master decided to just do a normal amount of blood because he didn't think it was realistic. And so therefore it's no longer funny. It's just disturbing.
It's just kind of, oh.
Exactly. It's like the Quentin Tarantino joke doesn't land.
Oh, that's funny.
And so it's the same sort of reference where same sort of thing like that. But then also, Kill Bill, Kill Bill when she goes to get revenge on, the crazy 88.
Is that the thing in the dojo where she's just chopping people?
Yeah. In the restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah.
The crazy 88.
Restaurant. That's right.
And there she's hacking off limbs and everything. Oh, yeah. And I think one of the ways that they could get away with that is it flipped to black and white.
Mm-hmm. So it's more of a shadow thing.
Exactly.
Too, right?
So you just don't see the blood. It's been a although while since it's there. So that's a way that he can kind of skirt around that where, you know, you, with Deadpool, you needed the color of it.
You really needed it. And, so let's go back to, the film.
Right.
One of the other things that it was really important to me, as far as many of the Deadpool comics as I've read, he's notorious for breaking the fourth wall.
Right.
And one of my favorite lines from the film was when he breaks the fourth wall, but he's like within a flashback. And
right.
It doesn't even make it. He says something like, was it, I can't remember if it was a flashback or not, but he said something like, whoa, breaking the fourth wall within a fourth wall. That's like 16 walls or something like
exactly.
that. Exactly. And it's stuff like that. And he even says to one of the villains at some point, he's like, who are you talking? He's all, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to them. And he looks at us. And that is Deadpool. Deadpool looks at the audience, makes comments about what he's doing. He makes comments about Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
And stuff like that.
And that's actually what I think is an even deeper level of that is that it's not just breaking the fourth wall, which means you're aware of the audience.
Right.
Deadpool is self-aware of the fact that he's a character.
That he's Ryan Reynolds playing a character.
Right.
Which is hilarious.
So you get certain tongue-in-cheek things. Like at the very beginning, and you're having that slow motion scene of the single shot pan around the whole car accident. And you see flying out of one of the guy's wallets is a Green Lantern card.
Right, right.
You know, things like that. Or the fact that even in the opening credits, there are no names.
I love that. I love
it's
that.
It's superhero. It's
hot chick.
Hot chick.
Some douchebag.
Exactly.
Or, you know, stuff like that. Talking about the producers and stuff like
yeah,
that,
and
which
then
is awesome.
Brilliant writers. Yeah. And it's like
the real heroes or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. Right. So it's completely self-aware there. And then, of course, when he's talking about his most beloved possession, the Wham album,
right.
sitting right on top is a Deadpool action figure from yeah. Wolverine Origins.
That's so good, man. So as far as and the other thing along these lines was the pokes of the studio.
Yes.
When he goes to the Xavier Mansion.
One of my favorite lines in the movie.
He knocks at the door and what's her name?
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Negasonic. She answers the door and then you hear Colossus off the side. And then he's like, and he's walking away. He's like, okay, I'll be out here. He's like, well, it's weird. This is a huge place. I only see two of you. It's like the studio couldn't afford any more X-Men or something like that, which is exactly it.
Exactly.
Which I love. By the way, spoilers.
Yeah.
I mean, but if you haven't seen Deadpool, you're not.
Exactly. Yet. But, yeah, it's exactly what it is. And, you know, going back to being self-aware that, you know, in the comics, he's self-aware that he's in a comic.
And absolutely.
This one, it's self-aware that he's in a movie. And like my favorite thing in that respect is when they're walking to the final fight and they had just gotten out of the cab and he left his whole bag of arsenal.
Yeah.
And so he stops the music because like, it's playing
the one from all the trailers, the exhibit DMX. One. Is it DMX or Exhibit?
Oh, is it Exhibit?
I think it's Exhibit.
Exhibit. Yeah. And it stops.
He calls.
He calls him. And
homeboy then, gets into an accident.
Yeah. But then he looks at the camera and says, all right, start the music.
All right, let's go. Cue the music.
And then, yeah. So it's completely self-aware.
And so that makes the movie really fun. But there's also, let's talk about the story a little bit. It's definitely an origin story.
Absolutely.
The darkness and the borderline insanity of Deadpool comes through.
Yes.
For sure. And that is something they, in the comics, there's a lot of runs where there are actual people in his head. And he's dealing with his own issues and someone else actually being in his head experiencing his issues, which is really interesting. But there's this level of that they don't do that per se in the film, but you know he's cracked, you know?
Yeah, and you know what's brilliant about that is comic books and comic book movies, and well, comic books definitely, but comic book movies more and more can really delve into the concept of a broken mind.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas it's harder to do that, especially in a comedy or whatever. But in superhero movies, you can get that with, you know, Heath Ledger's the Joker or hopefully what we're going to see in Margot Robbie's Harlequin.
Oh, we're going to see that for sure. And I think the way they did it in this was a little more subtle, like, in the fact that because he was disfigured.
Yeah, it's the way his mind broke.
It's those moments of, I see her and he's trying to approach her. And it's very much like, he's almost like a ghost in the background of her experience. And he's standing there toying with this idea, is, am I going to talk to her?
Right. And this is Marina Becerra, right. By the way.
And then he doesn't. That scene in the bathroom stands out to me when he goes to see her at the strip club.
Yes.
He's in there basically yelling at himself in the mirror, and you can see that he is it to us, you know, it's like, okay, so he doesn't look normal, but it's, that's how he broke. It's not only that he was separated from her, but he was disfigured in a way to where he didn't feel like he could be part of her life in the way that he was.
Right. And what I love in that bathroom scene is it's almost Deadpool yelling at Wade Wilson.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that, because that is that what is kind of going on in his mind a lot of times in the comics. It's almost like there's different parts of him that are warring with each other.
Exactly.
And they did that really well in the film.
Unlike the Joker, who is just clearly insane.
Well, obviously.
And, you know, that's all he is. You see the insane part. You get it a lot more in Two-Face or in Harlequin, right, where you see the battle of...
It's like, oh, the voice is telling me to do this. Oh, the other side of me is telling me to do this. You know, exactly. That kind of thing, right? I really enjoyed the villains in this. And
oh, absolutely.
And this is something that Marvel movies have gotten some flack for. Guardians of the Galaxy, and of course, then we have the Fantastic Four if we're talking about Fox. But, you know, some of these comic movies have gotten some flack for not very
how unfulfilling their villains are.
Right. And this, the way they did this,
villain of the week.
Yeah. But the way they did this, Francis, there was that idea of, what's my name? You know, and that says a lot about him.
Oh, I'm going to spell it out for
yeah.
you.
I love that part. But that says a lot about that particular villain. You see him in the beginning, and you see him as he first met Wade Wilson, and that whole arc. And he brings in this woman, this angel, you know, with the matchstick. And although she doesn't say much, you know that she is loyal to him because of this program. And that kind of thing.
Her full name is Angel Dust, by the way.
Right, Angel Dust. And I really enjoyed the villains in this. And that's not something that I've said in a lot of these Marvel, even Fox Marvel movies. I liked Francis's character, and I love the fact that he just kept showing up. He felt no pain. Because Deadpool's who he is, it was a perfect foil for him because Deadpool feels pain, you know, but he heals from it.
Yes.
Francis was the opposite. You know, he doesn't heal the same way, but he doesn't feel anything.
Right.
And so I thought that was kind of cool.
And that actually touches on the mental instability too, that he feels too much almost. Mm-hmm. Both physically and emotionally.
And some of the side characters were wonderful. The cab driver, phenomenal. Oh. Do you know the actor's name? I don't remember the actor's name.
No, but Dopinder.
Yeah. And so
which is actually, it turns out, is the name of somebody that Ryan Reynolds knew when he was young.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like they named it him because it was of somebody that has passed on, I think, but that somebody Ryan Reynolds knew when he was younger.
Yeah. Excuse me. I liked him a lot. I loved Colossus and Negasonic. I think my favorite scene with Colossus was when Deadpool loses Francis, and he's like really mad at Colossus, so he starts punching him.
He breaks both his wrists.
Then he breaks his foot, and then he gets dragged away. I just thought that was wonderful.
Oh, and then he goes all 127 hours.
Yeah, which is great. And again. Before we get off of this, the framework of, oh God, yeah. And then the flipping him off at the end was great.
No, the baby hand.
Oh, the baby hand? Oh, yes, the baby hand was good. There were so many moments in this. We'd go on forever, but one last thing I want to talk about is the way they frame the film.
Yes.
Which is very comic book esque. They started
very nonlinear.
Yeah. They started in the middle ish, you know, go forward a little bit, then backtrack all the way, then go forward a little bit. And then we get caught up. And of course,
very Tarantino.
Yeah. And then Deadpool Manor, he's just like, okay, now you're caught up. Now here we go.
Yep.
And then there's the baby hand. So,
baby hand. The two things I want to touch on last are, first of all, the post credit scene. Mm. The nod to Ferris Bueller.
Very good.
Which is awesome. And the just coming out and say it, yeah, next time we're going to have Cable.
We're going to have Cable. And I just finished the Deadpool versus Cable run
that
came out recently.
The Infinite Comic run? Or
no, the one that just came out, actually this last year. Five issues, really good.
Yeah, there's a current run going on right now called the Infinite Comic. So that is just, it's great. But also, let's talk about Tim Miller a little bit.
Okay.
Knocked it out of the park for his first movie.
Yeah.
And you and I are basically Tim Miller disciples from his work with Blur.
Well, and here's the thing about this film, and when you listen to Kevin Smith talk about this kid too, you could tell, and we talked about this, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, there was that clip of him talking about making this film. And the thing I liked about him is the fact that he is a Deadpool fan. He knows the comics. He knows the character. And it not only showed in this movie, it shined. He did a phenomenal job.
Yes.
And I cannot wait for the second one, especially if there's Cable in it. The relationship between Cable and Deadpool is both hilarious, sad.
Because Cable's like so stand up.
He's a stand up guy, but he's a time traveler.
And he has so many family issues going on.
Right. So we have all of these things, and these two together, meld in a weird way.
Because he's the son of one version of Scott Summers.
Right.
And right.
So I'm excited about this for sure.
So yeah, so that's so Deadpool, how many fingers straight up?
Well, at least 8 middle fingers out of 5. So the movie was great. I would love to see it again before it leaves the theater.
Definitely.
But I saw it twice, 2 days in a row. Stands up the second time. Even caught some other stuff the second time that I didn't catch the first time. The humor's there. We took one of our friends, actually the guy I do the Flipside podcast with, which has been on hiatus for a while. But Josh, he rarely likes movies, especially comic movies.
And he enjoyed it.
He not only enjoyed it.
He was laughing
the whole time. He took his girlfriend a couple days later.
Oh, really?
And saw it again.
Because I remember, literally, as soon as we left the theater, he posted on Facebook that he went to see it, and he never does that.
He never does that. He never sees movies twice in a theater.
Right.
And especially comic movies. So this one...
But this one plays on so many levels for adults.
But it was the humor.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he's got that sense of humor. And he loves... And that's why, you know, we do that other podcast together. It's just us effing around, basically.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of humor we usually enjoy. And Deadpool was perfect for him. And he took his girlfriend. She loved it. So it's a lot of fun. And I think that says a lot, in my opinion. Knowing this guy, if you knew my friend, that says a lot.
Super enjoyable. Definitely go see it.
Anything else on Deadpool, dude?
No, that's it for Deadpool.
Cool, man.
Except for, I will have to say that one thing that Tim Miller did do well is if they do decide to tie in the X-Men universe, mm-hmm. for example, an X-Force movie.
Yeah.
Or bringing Deadpool over to Wolverine, it set it up perfectly to do that without relying on that trope.
And I think the thing, and this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, the rated R stuff. There is a rumor X-Force and Wolverine 3 are going to be rated R. I think right. that's because Deadpool is in it. The problem is you can't, and this happened in the Wolverine movie I didn't see, but I heard about this. Was it Origins or the one before that? I think it was just the one that was
right.
called
it was
Wolverine.
The one after Origins. It's the one in Japan. It's the one based on the Japanese.
And they sew Deadpool's mouth shut or something like that.
Oh, no, that was Origins.
That was Origins. Okay. The problem with that is his appearance in that doesn't do Deadpool justice because it's not rated R.
Exactly.
And I think any movie he's in has to be rated R, which I think is going to make these movies stronger.
Honestly. Yeah, I think the only thing in the Origins version that does Deadpool any justice is the Wade Wilson persona that Ryan Reynolds does before he becomes Deadpool.
Okay, cool.
Because there's a scene like he's in an elevator.
And it is Ryan Reynolds, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Okay, now we're going to move on to news. We're just going to quickly run through some stuff because it's all quick news. But Emily Blunt has officially been cast in the Mary Poppins sequel. Mm. Which
they're still doing this, huh?
Yeah, well, this is not a sequel to the movie from a couple of years ago about the making of Mary Poppins. This is a sequel to Mary Poppins.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right. So this is Disney going back and redoing their old movies.
Well, not redoing. It's a sequel. Because the Mary Poppins books is not just Mary Poppins. There's a whole run.
Okay, I'm thinking like when they went back and did Cinderella in live action.
No.
Okay.
This is actually taking place 20 years after the Banks family. Because the movies do take on for quite a bit. So it's just Emily Blunt taking over the role of Mary Poppins.
Totally.
And it's basically the equivalent of now you have Alice through the Looking Glass and not just Alice in Wonderland.
Okay, cool.
It looks like Barbara Streisand is setting up to direct a biopic of Catherine the Great, who is infamous for being one of the first female leaders of a major nation.
Yeah.
Because Catherine the Great led Russia.
Okay.
And she's famous for...
Yeah, no, I remember her from Civ 5, Civilization.
Yeah, so like but that. She's famous for dying by being mounted by a horse or a bull or something.
Well, that's important.
But it looks like that Barbara Streisand is going to be casting Keira Knightley as Catherine the Great. So that should be interesting.
Nice.
We talked last week, either on the main show or on the Last Real Reviews, about that there's a new Rock movie coming out, but it's going to be done by the people who did San Andreas.
Right.
Well, San Andreas has just been greenlit to do a sequel. Huh. So
I still need to watch the first one.
You know, it's entertaining. It's a disaster.
I usually like movies like that.
Though. Right. It's a disaster flick. You know, if you like the Roland Emmerich movies, like, you know, Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah, I did like that.
Yeah. Same sort of premise. You know, this one involved an earthquake, the San Andreas Fault, obviously.
Cool.
The second one, it looks like, is going to be more centered globally, and it's going to focus on the whole Ring of Fire.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which covers the whole Pacific Ocean.
Awesome.
So that should be interesting. Speaking of The Rock, he's also doing the Baywatch movie.
Okay, can this not happen? Here's the thing. It's one thing to do... Okay. I guess if you're going to do it, you get The Rock. But...
Well, at least it's not The Hoff.
But do we need this? Is this one... This is one of those ones where I look at and I'm just like, it's 2016. That show was what? Early 90s?
Okay, first of all,
why do we need this?
It ran for over a decade, and it was the most successful worldwide show for years.
I don't care.
No, I completely agree, but...
The only reason we watched that, the only reason it was successful...
Look at him run.
...is because they ran.
Oh, yeah.
And people, guys, from 18 to 32, watched the show for the running. That was it. There was nothing else there.
Oh, I completely agree. And speaking of beautiful people in bikinis or whatever, they just cast a villain. And it's going to be played by Priyanka Chopra, who...
Who is she?
She is most well-known for doing... she does Bollywood movies. But she's recently well-known for being the lead in the TV show Quantico.
Oh, okay.
Which love.
And I haven't watched it yet.
She is great in it. Cool. So, yeah. So I'm actually... Not that I'm going to be rushing out to go see Baywatch, but at least they're casting good actors.
There's not a chance I'm seeing this movie.
Oh, no. Dark Tower, I put this one in for you, has cast Abby Lee as the female lead of Tirana.
Okay, so I don't know this. Hold on, because the name doesn't even sound familiar. And I've read the books. Character named Tirana.
Well, she is a minor character. Well, there are no real major female leads.
Okay, well, there's the not in the Gunslinger.
Right, and that's right. What this
later
is.
Later there is. Okay.
And so she is a character in it, and I'm sure they're going to flesh out her character a little bit more in the film because you need to have a female lead.
And really the Gunslinger is, there's really just him.
Right.
For the most part.
Exactly. But evidently she's also in the later books, and so this is just going to be introducing her a little bit sooner. But she's well known because she was one of the wives in Mad Max Fury Road.
That's right. She doesn't show up till the 7th book. That's why. Okay. Got it.
But yeah, so she played one of the wives in Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, right. Was she the one? She wasn't the pregnant one, right?
No. She was the blonde one.
Okay.
Next thing, Donnie Yen of, Asian cinema fame, but he's also in Rogue One.
Yeah.
He has been cast to be in XXX3, The Return of Xander Cage.
So can I make a comment?
Go ahead.
We don't need this movie.
Okay, you know what the funny thing is?
Here's the thing. No, let me say what I'm saying. Okay. The first XXX, fine. Fine. Fun, sort of.
The second one, we didn't need to see Ice Cube in a wetsuit.
There was not a chance that was going to happen and was going to do well. Why do we need this?
Because Vin Diesel's back.
Ugh.
Which is why it's called The Return of Xander Cage. But.
Whatever. I like Vin Diesel, though.
Well, no.
And I like these kind of movies. I just feel like we just keep rehashing things.
Oh, absolutely. But now that he's a producer, he's going to get the mileage out of his characters.
Okay.
Which is why we're getting 10 Fast and the Furious. We're getting an expanded universe of Chronicle. Yeah. It's why Riddick. Mm-hmm. It's why we're getting another XXX. Because these are all movies that he's a producer on. And so...
Makes sense.
He has a financial gain for it.
Don't get me wrong. I was very upset about the second one. I really did enjoy the first one.
Oh, it had
one.
A great soundtrack. Yeah. But the movie was horrible.
I liked the first one.
Oh, yeah. The first one was fun.
Yeah.
Woody Allen has agreed because he's already been doing a TV series on Amazon Prime. But he has already signed over the rights for distribution and marketing to Amazon for his next rom-com, which has a great cast already, including Steve Carell, among many others.
Cool.
And then a little inside...
is this for real?
Yeah, a little inside thing. A couple years ago, Rotten Tomatoes bought Flixster.
Right.
Well, now Fandango has bought Rotten Tomatoes and Flixster.
I wonder if they were able to do this because of the Star Wars pre-sales. Because remember, like, Fandango pretty much broke when Star Wars Force Awakens started selling their tickets. I wonder if... I don't know how those websites make money, really. I guess I do.
Well, they have service charges.
Right. So I guess that makes sense.
It's the same way Ticketmaster makes money.
Yeah. I just can't help but wondering if that extra revenue helped them make this purchase. But
yeah, well, also there's already a working relationship with it because when you go to Fandango, it shows the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh, okay.
So we have a couple of release date announcements. First one is Blade Runner 2, which we've talked about. And it turns out it's going to be starring not only Harrison Ford, but Ryan Gosling. And it is, and it is getting an official release date of January 12th of 2018.
Very cool. I'm glad Ford's back.
Yeah. John Wick 2, which if you haven't seen the first John Wick,
I have not.
So good.
Okay.
And the way, if you think about Deadpool and the way that, was it Sister Catherine's, the bar?
Yeah.
Yeah. The way that is very much like the hotel in John Wick.
Okay.
It's like a.
Like a mercenary bar.
Exactly.
Okay.
But it's also a neutral site.
Neat.
Right. So John Wick 2, it's called Chapter 2, I think, is has been announced for February 10th of next year. So February 10th, 2017.
Cool.
Which is going to be a major weekend because it's putting them against Lego Batman and 50 Shades Darker.
Well, the second one I can give a crap about, but Lego Batman's going to be fun. Right. And that's a year from now. So I seem to see more movies in February than I normally do.
Well, that's taking up the Deadpool date.
Right. Okay. Makes sense.
Also, The Great Wall, which is a movie. I'm drawing a blank on who's. Oh, Brad Pitt? Matt Damon? I can't remember. Yeah. Matt Damon is producing The Great Wall. And it's getting a date of February 17th. So a week after.
Ooh, Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. So a week after. Well, that's who's in John Wick.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. So it's a week after John Wick, but it's going to be going up against the Maze Runner sequel and Bad Boys 3. So in a 2 week period, we're going to be getting John Wick 2, The Great Wall, Bad Boys 3, Maze Runner 3, Lego Batman, and 50 Shades Darker.
I'll see Bad Boys 3.
Yeah, we will.
Because I love Bad Boys 2 and 1. Both those guys are back, right, for that?
Yes.
Okay, sweet.
And I believe Michael Bay is also back.
Ooh, even better.
Because he directed those.
I think that's important.
All right, so that's it for release dates. We have two kind of groups of trailers we're going to go over. One we're just not going to really talk about individually. It's a group of trailers that were released during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they were fun.
And they are, most of them are ones that we had seen before, and these are just different cuts. And that includes Captain America Civil War, which is important because it was the first visual or video really performance of Black Panther.
Yeah, you see him slashing.
Jungle Book is the first full-length trailer, so you just saw the majesty of it.
Yeah.
X-Men Beautiful. Apocalypse had the introduction of Psylocke, Olivia Munn.
Olivia Munn, that looks so cool, dude.
I know, right?
So cool.
And then we had the first trailers for Jason Bourne, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is a sequel to...
Cloverfield.
Right, J.J. Abrams.
Right.
Cloverfield. Then the sequel to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And then we saw...
Which looked good, and I didn't see the first one. I was that trailer looked pretty cool for the
sequel. It looked entertaining. It's just I can't get over Megan Fox.
I know,
as brutal. April O'Neil.
It's brutal. I know,
but this one I believe is introducing not only Shredder but
Casey Jones.
Yep. Also, Batman v Superman did an interesting thing. They teamed up with Turkish Airlines.
This is weird to me.
Yeah, but then they were like traveled. Commercials to go to Metropolis and Gotham,
but it worked. It was kind of cool. It was kind of weird, but it worked.
Yeah, but definitely interesting marketing. And you know, we've already talked about Alice Through the Looking Glass, but it was just kind of heartbreaking watching the Super Bowl and then the Alice Through the Looking Glass commercial came on and we heard the voice for Alan Rickman.
I know.
And if I'm not mistaken, this might be the last time we see him or hear him on film.
Yeah, unless there's something that he shot we don't know about,
right?
But that might be it. Yeah.
So Alan Rickman. Such a loss.
I know, man. It makes me sad.
And then we have a group of trailers that we hadn't seen. Secret Life of Pets, which basically just looks like the animal version of Toy Story, but it still looks funny.
No, that's all right.
There is a trailer for Pee-wee's Big Holiday, which I could do without, but it looks...
But here's the thing with that. He looks exactly the same.
Seriously, it's like 25 years later.
And the effects and what he does in the world are the same. Like, he's jumping through the air doing weird things. I think it might be worth seeing just for nostalgia. You
know? Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
I could do without Pee-wee's Big Top Pee-wee.
See, and I watched the show, though.
The show was funny. Like,
I don't know.
It had Lawrence Fishburne as Cowboy Bob or Bill.
It has a special place for me. We'll see how it goes. Anyway.
Midnight Special looks interesting. Yeah, it almost looks kind of Close Encounter-ish.
Yeah.
But
it's hard to say what's really going on.
Yeah, it's about a kid that has powers. We don't know what they are or where he got them. And they go all E.T. The family tries to keep him away from the government.
Yeah. E.T. without an alien.
Exactly. Well, we don't know. Yeah, exactly. talking about movies that didn't need to get made, Dolph Lundgren fills the shoes of Arnold Schwarzenegger in Kindergarten Cop 2.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
This is stupid. I mean, look, I'm in for most things. This is stupid. I not only did not like the first one, I'm just not. Why? Why? In 2016 do we need Kindergarten Cop 2?
I know.
Can't come up with anything better?
Like 26 years later.
God's sake. Continue. Next one looked good.
It did Bastille Day.
Yeah.
The new Idris Elba movie looks phenomenal.
Did we miss something? Oh, we'll
get back to that.
Yeah, okay.
Bastille Day does look phenomenal.
No, that looks really cool. Really cool.
Very good. And then Gary Marshall is back, and he's commandeered another holiday. We've already seen him take over Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve.
Let's give them all the holidays.
Yeah, now we're on Mother's Day.
And this one looks great, actually.
It does, because the main characters are Jennifer Aniston and Jason Sudeikis, and they had great chemistry in We're the Millers.
All right, so let's get this last one.
Yeah, last trailer is, you know, it's one of those series, which are just going on, and I'm finding more and more enjoyment in the series as it goes along. And I know you haven't seen any of them.
I haven't seen them, and I'm intrigued because of this trailer. I'm intrigued to go back and see the other ones.
Right. This is The Purge.
Right.
The first one was definitely a standalone. It had Ethan Hawke, and it focused basically on one family in one house, right? And basically the idea of The Purge is that violence had gotten so out of control that the United States had a new group of founding fathers that kind of took control. And they set up what was called Purge Night, where all crime, including murder, is legal for 12 hours.
That's crazy.
And the idea is that it purges everybody's need for violence.
Okay.
And therefore the rest of the year is safe. So that's what the idea of the first movie was. Okay. And it was an interesting concept. The way it was dealt with, it was very cool. Because it dealt with a family and a neighborhood and how people interact with each other.
Okay.
The second one, which was called Anarchy, which was really enjoyable, introduced I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he's the guy who plays Crossbones in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, yeah.
It introduces him, and it talks more about the overall importance of the night and the fact that it's all government run, and it's really just a way to keep poor people
in check, basically.
Exactly.
Or cow their numbers a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this new one is called The Purge Election Year, and they've brought back the guy from the second one, and they've also brought in Elizabeth Mitchell, who I love. She played if you can't think of her face right offhand, she played Mrs. Claus in the Santa Claus movies with Tim Allen. She was also in Gia with she was in Lost.
Oh, one was she?
She was the blonde that ends up marrying Sawyer's character.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
totally.
So, you know, stuff you've seen her in tons of stuff. And I love her. And so she's brought in as a senator who's trying to end the purge.
Nice.
Because you find this out in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler, but you find out that in her origin, on Purge Night when she was a kid, her dad like went nuts or whatever and played a game where the mom had to pick which of the kids survived. And everyone in the family died except for her. So she was the sole survivor.
Wow. That's
crazy. And now she's fighting against the purge. And so now the government's going to try to take her out.
All right.
So it looks really interesting.
I was intrigued by the trailer.
Yeah.
It was a little disturbing in spots, but.
Oh, it's definitely disturbing.
But looks cool. I like stuff like that sort of. So I'm.
Exactly. So we are going to go into our Oscars stuff now. We're going to do this in two batches. We're going to first talk about news, and then we're going to go over my predictions because I know you haven't seen a ton of this stuff. So it's basically just going to be me talking and you, I'm sure, responding.
Oh, I'm
going to
say stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I always do.
There's three little bits of news. The first one, you can't touch on this year's Oscars without mentioning the movement of hashtag Oscars so white. As me being a white person and you not being a white person.
I am not, no.
What is your thoughts on this?
White people always win, black people always lose.
Well, but
I mean, and look, there's been times where Denzel's been up, and other black actors and actresses have been up for it, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, we have, and ironically enough, back in my collegiate career, actually, I did write a paper on this phenomenon. And I chose to personally focus on the 1967 films of Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
Because in that year, he'd already been an Oscar winner.
Right.
He won for Best Actor in Lilies of the Field. He was only the second black person ever to win an Oscar in, at that point, the 30-year history of the show.
Right.
And then there wasn't another winner until Lou Gossett Jr. in the early 80s.
Jesus.
And then after that, it wasn't.
That's a 40-year gap almost?
Is
it 60-something?
No, like 15 years. But then you had
67
to 82. Okay. And then you had Denzel in 89.
Right.
And then there was like nominees as you got along. But
that wasn't Denzel's only nomination.
No, he won in 89. But then you had the breakout year of 2002.
Right.
Which is where you had Denzel win for Training Day, Halle Berry win for Monsters Ball.
Right.
And Sidney Poitier got the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Right.
That was a big year.
Cool.
And since then, we've had Jennifer Hudson, Monique. You know, it's become more common. But 67... was a rare year because Sidney Poitier was in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Right.
And In the Heat of the Night. Both movies are specifically about race.
Right.
And he's the main catalyst in both movies. Yet the two people that got nominated for Best Actor were Rod Steiger and Spencer Tracy.
Oh my God.
The white actors in the movie.
Right.
So, yeah, I actually wrote an article on this. You can actually find it online. But it's a really interesting concept. But I just find it really interesting because there were actually some really well done African-American made films, yeah, like Straight Outta Compton,
right,
and Creed. Ryan Coogler did great, but unfortunately, each one of those only got one nomination.
And see, and from what I've heard about Creed, that's crazy.
Yeah, Creed is phenomenal. I finally watched it. Coogler did a great job.
Right.
So screenplay and he's going to be doing
Black Panther.
He's doing Black Panther. He did a great job directing. Michael B. Jordan was phenomenal as Adonis Creed. But the only nomination to come out of Creed is Sylvester Stallone for Best Supporting Actor.
I hear he did well.
Oh, he was good.
But. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
But then ironically enough, Straight Outta Compton also gets a one nomination for Best Original Screenplay. Which is great. It's like, kind of. Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Until you realize that the two people nominated are two white writers.
So what is, I mean.
And it's not O'Shea Jackson Jr. for a brilliant portrayal of Ice Cube.
Right.
It's
and I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, from what I hear, that it makes, I get that the writing could be up for it, but why not have some of the actors up for it too?
Right. Eazy-E was phenomenal.
Right.
The guy played Eazy-E. The direction was really well done. I'm actually surprised that Paul Giamatti didn't get a nomination for Best Supporting Actor.
Well, and here's the thing, dude. Like, it's interesting to me because, and I don't know if we can really do this in this conversation, but there's also the idea of like fantasy and sci-fi only getting, or mostly getting, you know, special effects.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this just a couple days ago.
We did.
You and I in our regular conversations, we were talking about District 9.
Right.
And how that got nominated for Best Picture, but.
And I love that film. I've taught that film. I think that film is phenomenal. But again, it just doesn't, I don't understand what really goes on. That's why I think that could be the other reason I'm not the biggest Oscar dude, is just because it's like, okay, it's going to be some movie I've never heard of or some white dude. You know what I mean? And the movies I have seen aren't the ones that are represented. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Very rarely do you get a genre movie like we're discussing that really comes to the forefront. Probably the most well,
Peter Jackson stuff.
Yeah,
probably.
The just Lord of the Rings
effects, though.
Right. Well, until you got Return of the King, which was nominated for 13 Oscars and won Best Picture. But that was again the third movie in the series. It finally got there.
And that wasn't, in my opinion, the best one of the series either.
No,
but
then you also, you know, Star Wars movies tend to be largely ignored, except for special effects. I mean, the only acting nomination ever to come out of a Star Wars film is Alec Guinness for Best Supporting Actor in the original one.
Right. Which I find interesting because
Harrison Ford could have gotten a nomination, but I think the old fogey done good nomination went to Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah. And as far as Force Awakens goes, I mean, there was some absolutely phenomenal performances in that film.
But it was also very ensemble driven.
You're right.
But on the other hand, so was Spotlight, and that got two Oscar noms for acting.
There we go.
All right, so that kind of covers the Oscars so white. It's tragic. But the Academy has kind of come back with, they're making changes to promote diversity, and part of it is changing the voting makeup of the voting body.
Oh.
So it's
You know how I imagine it?
What?
Do you want to know how I imagine it?
I imagine
like kind of like there's like 12 dudes, white dudes, and they're like 70 and above voting.
Okay, you know what the funny
That's how I imagine it.
Okay, you know what the funny thing about that is that there are actually thousands of members of the Academy.
Oh, I imagine.
And they're actually broken up into groups. Like, you can only vote for certain categories. It's not like everybody in the Academy gets a vote for everything.
Oh, okay.
You have to, like, for, I think, documentaries, you actually have to have gone to sanctioned screenings to show that you've seen them. Like certain effects awards you can only vote on if you're in that subcommittee.
I was thinking of it very, very more Big Brother-y, but
No, and that's kind of where we get to the other funny thing is the other major award show is Golden Globes, which is actually a voting body of only like 78 people.
Oh.
And they're all press. It's really kind of interesting.
Okay.
So theoretically the Academy is much more democratic,
yeah,
but it's just the makeup of their voting body is what's wrong.
Okay.
Very similar to what we're getting with like how they're changing I think it's Hall of Fame voting for baseball.
Oh, okay.
And that it used to be if you had a vote for the Hall of Fame, you always had a vote. But now if you aren't an active writer for sports within 10 years, you don't get your vote. Okay.
Interesting.
So they're making it where it's not as old a demographic.
Cool.
The last thing is an article that just came out in Variety this week, but it's basically the ongoing debate over Oscar campaigning.
Okay.
This is something I just want to touch on really quick because this is where you kind of the Weinstein brothers, when they ran Miramax, were the masters of this.
Oh, yeah.
Where they made no money at the box office, but
they cleaned up at the Oscars.
But though. The English Patient, Chocolat, Pulp Fiction, all these movies cleaned up because they put tons of money into marketing specifically to campaign for the films.
I see what you're saying.
Plus the fact that because of this campaigning, most movies that get nominated are released between September and December, right?
Uh-huh.
Because it is the calendar year that is considered. Very rarely do you get a movie from the early part of the year which wins Best Picture. The only one that really jumps out at me is Braveheart, which won Best Picture in 1995. It was actually a February release,
okay,
but they re-released it in November to get it back in the mindset of the voting public. So it's really kind of interesting in that respect. And the Variety started with a quote saying how most of the it's unfair because most of the nominations come out of that time frame and everything. And it turns out the quote was from Bob Hope from like 60 years ago.
Oh, really?
Because he was a longtime host of the show.
Oh, that's funny.
It's really kind of funny how it hasn't changed in that 60 years. All right. That's it for the news. We're going to do a quick run through of my nominations and predictions.
Cool, dude.
All right. Well, as you know, there's 20 plus categories and we're not going to go over them. All. I'm just going to touch on.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say the eight major ones, which are best actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, original screenplay, adapted screenplay, director, and best picture.
Cool.
And I'm going to tell you what I think should win and what I think will win.
Okay.
Okay. Starting with best actor, it's Leo's race to lose for a couple of different reasons. I actually haven't seen Revenant yet, but everyone.
You think it's going to be Stallone?
No, this is best actor.
Oh, that's not supporting actor. Sorry, yeah.
So the main nominees are Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Matt Damon, who was wonderful in The Martian, Michael Fassbender, who was good in Steve Jobs, and Eddie Redmayne, who won last year for Theory of Everything. He's up again for The Danish Girl.
Okay.
All worthy. I really enjoyed Matt Damon, but again, it's – I think too modern of a performance almost to get nominated or to win.
All right.
And it's to the point where Leo just finally needs to win.
Okay.
So I think it's his to lose and I think he will win too. So,
okay, cool.
So there's that actress in a leading role. I will honestly say I've only seen one of the five performances and it's Brie Larson. I just watched Room a couple days ago.
Oh, you were telling me about that.
And this film utterly destroyed me. I am not kidding.
I'm going to have to see it. I'm going to see if I can convince Kate to see it.
I'm not really a crier.
Yeah.
I was literally a blubbering fool sitting.
I know you texted me. I was like, what is wrong with you?
Seriously, I was crying for the last like half hour of the movie.
That's awesome.
And I can say, even though there are incredible nominees across the board, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence gets nominated again. Cate Blanchett
is What's she up for?
Jennifer Lawrence is up for Joy.
Oh, okay.
It's the only nomination from that movie. Cate Blanchett's up for Carol, which is up for, I think, five awards. Charlotte Rampling is up for 45 years. She's a bit of an older actress.
Okay.
And I think it's Cerise Ronan. But she's now grown up, and she's in a movie called Brooklyn, which I still haven't had a chance to see. But Brie Larson is cleaning up every single award show so far. And so she's going to win, and she should win, because she is phenomenal.
Very good.
Actor in a supporting role. This is where I start to disagree. I think it's going to be Stallone for a couple of reasons. Again, it's the Leo DiCaprio. It's the,
he needs to win it.
Right. It's the same thing where, they finally gave, John Wayne an Oscar best actor for True Grit, even though it wasn't his best performance. It was finally just,
but it's like, you need to win one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But I will say, Christian Bale was good in The Big Short. But it really should go to Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight. Phenomenal movie.
Okay.
And Mark Ruffalo, of course, is known for playing.
I love Ruffalo.
Incredible Hulk. And he was actually also.
Would you say he's incredible?
No, he is incredible.
I'm joking.
And I just saw Bridge of Spies, which has Mark Rylance in it and Tom Hardy for The Revenant. I think could be a dark horse, but it really should be Mark Ruffalo, and I hope it is. But I honestly think it will go to Stallone.
Yeah.
Actress in a supporting role, we have Jennifer Jason Leigh, who got nominated for Hateful Eight, the only basically female in the movie. Rooney Mara is up for Carol. Rachel McAdams is brilliant in Spotlight. Alicia Vikander, who had a great year, she was nominated for Danish Girl. She also played Ava in Ex Machina.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I really want to see that.
She also plays the female lead in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Okay.
So she was all over the place this year, and she was good in everything. I think Rachel McAdams could be a dark horse, but I think Kate Winslet will and should win because nice. She was the
biggest. And she hasn't won an Oscar, has she? Or did she win for Titanic?
She won twice. She didn't win for Titanic. She was one of those where she had been nominated five times without winning.
Oh, okay.
But then she won supporting actor, actress for,
It was the one with Black something, wasn't it? No, that was, that's.
No, she won for, she won for The Reader.
Okay.
Best actress for The Reader. And then she won for something else. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah.
Well. But she did just pick up the Golden Globe for Steve Jobs. And nice. She was the best thing in that movie.
Okay.
All right. Screenplay awards are really kind of interesting because this is usually where you get the people like Tarantino will finally win. Like right. He won for Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
He deserved it for Pulp Fiction.
Oh, absolutely.
The movie's brilliant.
For adapted screenplay, this is, you know, adapted obviously means it's based on a book or another form right. of medium. I honestly, think it'll go to Room. Room okay. was just phenomenal.
Cause you said that was based off a book.
Yeah. And, The Martian is also up for it, which is good. The Big Short, Brooklyn and Carol. But I honestly think it's going to be Room.
Cool.
Original screenplay is where I think we might get a little bit of a dark horse. I hope it's Inside Out. Because
that movie was absolutely phenomenal.
Right.
But this like, talk about crying in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I see that movie, I cry.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be that guy. And Frozen, I cry a couple times, but there's a couple moments. But Bing Inside Bong. Out was even worse.
Bing bong.
Like, I mean, it's just oh. like, oh my God, dude. And like, I'm looking at my kids watching this movie and I'm watching this movie and I'm just like, I'm a mess.
Exactly.
You know, my wife is obviously crying, but right. she cries at all movies.
So I hope it's Inside Out. But the other nominees are so strong. Bridge of Spies, Ex Machina, Spotlight, and Straight Outta Compton.
Okay. So I haven't seen any of the other four, but I plan right. on seeing at least Straight Outta Compton.
Before. I think Inside Out has a good shot. I honestly think it'll probably go to Spotlight though.
Okay.
And then the last two are, Best Director and Best Picture. Best Director is, I'm thinking it's probably going to go to, Inarritu.
Okay.
For The Revenant. It's just the incredible things he had to go through to get that film made.
Yeah.
And,
I'm bummed we didn't get to see that, but
yeah. And using, true lighting and yeah. not uplighting or backlighting anything. But I think it should go to, the guy who directed Room.
Again,
it just knocked me out of my socks. Tom McCarthy also did a great job with Spotlight. And then the last one is Best Picture. I think going into this, the front runner is Revenant. Obviously, yeah. it won the Golden Globe. It's getting a lot of buzz. It's got the most nominations of the year this year. I know I've been hyping Room, but my choice would be Spotlight.
Okay.
And what I think Spotlight has going for it is it won the Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble.
Oh, okay.
Makes so sense. The actors themselves think that Spotlight is the best group of actors. Of course, you know, that doesn't take into account the screenplay or the right. directing or whatnot. And that's where Inarritu might come up. But just the storyline of Spotlight is so powerful. It's about the Boston Globe investigation into the Catholic Church scandal in Boston.
Totally. Before we get on, you know, get out of here, I want to say thanks for doing this, the Oscar thing. I know a lot of our listeners watch movies and stuff, and, I think that this is a perfect time to kind of invite them to have a dialogue with us about the stuff before the Oscars, you know? So, you know, if you have an opinion, let us know, let Will know, you know, all that kind of stuff. I think that's really important.
Yeah. I'm going to be posting a blog to our website. So check us out, theusualpodcast.com, and it'll have my full list of my choices. There'll be I'll put a link to a downloadable PDF format. And if you want to submit that to, submit your own choices before cool. the Oscars, we will, you know, give away a prize of some sort.
Yeah. Why not?
Okay. And, you know, we'll come up with what that's going to be later. But, also, follow my, Twitter handle at I am Will Griggs, because I will be live tweeting the Oscars.
Awesome.
All right. Well, that is it. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, just it always reminds me when we talk Oscars how many movies I haven't seen, but you know, it's all good, man. We got to talk about Deadpool. Oscars, although I probably won't be live tweeting and or watching them, unless you need a place to watch them, and then you'll be at my house and then I'll be watching them. otherwise it'll be fun. You know, I'm excited that we're doing this, and hopefully other people have their opinions too. I'm looking forward to seeing a couple of these movies, especially the ones I miss in the theater, like, you know, Straight Outta Compton and, The Revenant and stuff like that. I can't wait to see those. Granted, it's probably not going to be in time for the Oscars, but it'd be cool. I can't wait to see them.
So. Yeah. I completely took advantage of this midwinter recess that yeah. we have from school, and I have been marathoning movies and documentaries for the last like 4 or 5 days. And I didn't even touch on the best documentary feature, which Amy is just gonna.
Yeah, you're telling me about that.
So good. All right, so that's it. Thanks for tuning in to the Usuals, Real Reviews, Oscars, and Deadpool special.
Yep.
We welcome all feedback. So once again, if you have comments or questions and you want to read about anything discussed on the show, you can find us at theusualpodcast.com. Email us at theusualpodcast@gmail.com. And find us on Facebook, Google+, Pinterest, Instagram, and SWOTOR Network. You can also reach me at I Am Will Griggs on Twitter. Marshall can be found at Darth Pops, and we are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and hopefully Google Play. And so please take the time to give us a good rating and like or share any of our content. Also go to our support us page, audibletrial.com/theusualpodcast. Go to patreon.com/theusualpodcast. Thanks again, and we will see you at the movies.
Later.